Everybody ready? Okay, let's go on to number seven. Discussion on CDBG first draw requirements. Corey, that's you.
Yeah, let me tee this one up a little bit. The city received a $1.2 million community development block grant.
A what?
A community development block grant.
Oh, okay.
It's a CDBG grant. It's a federal funds administered through the state, and they are competitive. And the city received the funds to be spent on the design and engineering of wastewater expansion and improvement projects. So the city is in preparation of putting out an RFP, or request for proposals, for engineering firms who are interested in doing this work. And the city also budgeted $800,000 for designing the water component of the projects. So the city's getting ready to put out these RFPs to get a consultant on board to begin the actual design and engineering, hopefully in the next, I'd say, a couple months as winter approaches. And one of the funding consultants we worked with described the CDBG funds as the stickiest ones, and by that he meant that there's a lot of hoops and requirements and things that the city's required to do to be able to utilize those funds. And fortunately for myself and the rest of the city staff, there are some funds built into that for a grant consultant. And so the city put out an RFP for grant consultant services, and we got on board Neighbor Impact, and in particular Andrew Spreadborough, who's going to come up and join us to talk about these few items. So staff's been working with Andrew over really the last couple months, getting some things lined up, what are called first draw requirements, so that we have everything in order. So when we go to pay the consultant and make a draw from the CDBG funds, everything transfers accordingly. So what we have tonight are a few items that Andrew has prepared. Again, staff's worked upon that. We've been coordinating with the state on making sure that these meet the requirements, and ideally, again, it depends on the discussion tonight and some final back and forth with the state. Our hope would be to discuss tonight and make some changes over the next 2.5 weeks and have them on the council October 11th agenda for final review and approval. So I'm going to turn it over to Andrew, and he can hit the high points and walk us through some of these documents and plans that the city needs to have in place.
Thank you, Corey. And again, my name's Andrew Spreadborough. I'm with Neighbor Impact. And as Corey mentioned, the city has contracted with Neighbor Impact to help out with grant administration. I hadn't heard that term, sticky funding. That's pretty accurate. On one hand, CDBG is nice. It's federal funding. There's no match requirements. It supports a lot of very important projects. Infrastructure projects and community facility projects, notably some housing projects, but on the other hand, it's very difficult to manage. There's a lot of federal requirements that have been laid down. And so one of my roles early in the project here will be to assist you in meeting those first draw requirements. And there are three things I wanted to go over today. There's a longer list of first draw requirements. Not all need council action. Some we're just kind of working with city staff to move through. But there are three things I wanted to review with you that require action, as Corey said, before we can actually draw down those grant funds. So those three things are a fair housing resolution that the council will be asked to pass. The second is to approve a Section 3 plan, and I'll describe what that is, but it basically has to do with directing opportunities that come about through this grant funding to low and moderate income citizens and businesses. And the third is a limited English proficiency plan. Okay, so these are three requirements here. We don't have a lot of ability to just ignore them. The grant money will not be available if we do. So we need to make sure that how we package this works for you as the city and meets the state and federal requirements. So I'll just walk through all three and either speed me up or slow me down if you'd like. I believe you all have copies of the drafts, and I will stress, I think Corey mentioned these are drafts. We have the ability to, in a couple areas at least, tweak them or change them. So the first is the Fair Housing Resolution. Hopefully you have a copy of the draft in front of you. I must admit, there's not much ability to change this. This was a verbatim. There's one typo on I'll mention, but other than that, it's a verbatim requirement in terms of a resolution that all cities that receive these grant funds pass. What it basically is saying that the city supports federal fair housing requirements or non-discrimination in renting housing and purchasing housing or brokering housing. What it's also doing is that you will publicize this through publishing this resolution in newspapers expressing support for the federal fair housing requirements, that you will post materials around fair housing, which we've already secured from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, and that if citizens feel like they've been discriminated against based on protected class and housing, that you will assist them in putting forth any claim to the authority, state or federal. That assistance is not really defined, but basically it's passing on information to complaint lines, those sorts of things. The one typo, if you have in front of you, in the first paragraph, we'll need to change the year. About midway through, it says the Federal Fair Housing Amendments Act of 1899. It was 1988, so just a couple numbers changed, but wording is very important when we take action on these, so we'll clean that up. But other than that, this is basically the resolution you'll be asked to pass. I'll pause if you have questions or concerns.
Does anybody have any questions on this part?
It's pretty, to me it just seems like something that we as a city, a baby city, don't have a need to have in place anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think we've done this before.
A few items.
Yeah.
Very well may have, yes. So sorry for the repetition.
Let's
move on. Okay. So the second requirement is a Section 3 plan. This is a little more complicated, but there's also a little more discretion if the city would like to make some changes. There isn't just a standard format like this resolution where we just kind of copied and pasted. The Section 3 plan, there is some ability to make some changes. Our approach in drafting this was to make it as simple as possible. And I'll attempt to very succinctly describe what the Section 3 requirements are. Basically, as a recipient of the federal funds, you must make special effort to recruit, target, and direct economic opportunities to Section 3 residents and business concerns. These economic opportunities are tied specifically to the grant funding. It's not all city business, it's just any uses of this grant funding must be targeted to low and moderate income populations if there is any hiring as a direct result or in any contracting. Now I'll just kind of cut to the chase here. In terms of hiring, the city will not be doing any hiring to manage this grant. The only contracting besides with Neighbor Impact will be with the consulting engineering firm that's hired to do the work. So really, you know, this is a kind of it's a federal requirement that applies to a wide range of projects. Most are actually construction projects, so there often is hiring by construction contractors, there are kind of Section 3 businesses that might bid on construction or service contracts. Really is not going to come into play here because, as far as I know, not many engineering firms are going to staff up, and those positions don't tend to be hired by the Section 3 residents. But regardless, there needs to be a plan in place. So the city's responsibility really will be to follow certain, advertising of contracting opportunities. When we do the engineering procurement, we'll just make sure that all the outreach is handled through minority-owned business publications and to just a wide range beyond the normal kind of procurement process when we bid on the contracting job. We also need to ensure that there are certain contract clauses in any contract. We have this clause in the Neighbor Impact Agreement with the city. We'll ensure it's in the engineering agreement as well. That clause is exhibit, exhibit A of the plan. And that's most of the requirement, to be honest, in terms of this project.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions on this one?
I think it's pretty much cut and dried.
Okay.
I just wanted to know why it affected only the engineering part and not the construction part.
Because this grant is not paying for the construction phase. Yeah, there's other funding involved. And this is kind of a HUD funding. CDBG comes through HUD, so it is limited to this.
Do we not have any funding that comes from CDBG for the construction phase?
No.
Okay.
Stu, anything?
I just don't like federal requirements telling us who to hire and who not, and that's the same objection I had the last time we went through this. But we don't have much of a choice. I just want it on the record. I don't agree with it.
Good.
Okay.
Is this on?
Yeah, I guess. All this is sort of standard documentation here. I mean, it's nothing that we really made up. It's standard from other city practices.
Yeah, and again, there is some flexibility. The grant management handbook actually provides 30 pages of template that we could build into a plan. I decided to keep it as simple as I could. I ran the draft by the state. They're okay with it. They didn't ask for any changes. So again, what I think you just need to do is make sure we advertise. The one thing I didn't mention that I should have is when the criteria for selecting the engineer is put together, that we need to build in some sort of preference for Section 3 businesses. Now, Section 3 businesses, before they apply, have to self-certify. They need to put in paperwork that demonstrates that they meet the requirements. No Section 3 businesses, before they apply for this work or respond to the procurement, if no Section 3 businesses submit that paperwork, then that requirement's been met.
Okay, also in January, he's going to hire another person, assistant planner. They may work on this, but has that no bearing on anything whatsoever?
The funds aren't going to be used to hire them.
Right.
So that's completely separate.
Even though that they may be taking part in it.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
Double checking on that one. So.
Yes.
Okay, number three.
Okay, last but not least is a limited English proficiency plan. Again, in this case, the city's requirements are pretty minimal. Basically, the intent here is to provide, this is the federal citation, is the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and an executive order from 2000 directing all federal agencies to work to ensure that programs or projects receiving federal assistance provide meaningful access to limited English proficiency persons. And so the city, in taking on these funds, is required to make reasonable efforts to provide language assistance to ensure meaningful access to limited English proficiency persons in your city activities. Now, as part of this process, there's a wide range of activities that a city or a county recipient could take on. Part of the process was to do an analysis of the limited English population in the community, and then kind of design services to meet that population. So some cities have very large populations of limited English population. Pine has a very small limited English population. We used the 2015 number to do the analysis, the 2015 census numbers. Less than 2% of the population is limited English. Less than 50 people in the community that are over the age of 5, which this applies to. So you kind of got the lowest threshold to meet. We still were required by the state to put together a plan, so I did that. And again, I took a somewhat minimalist approach. On the high end of expectations, you could have all of your important city documents translated into Spanish or another language, and take very positive steps to do outreach to those communities. On the low end, really the requirement is to provide interpretation services if requested for public meetings or to assist in public services. So this is really built around training staff to reviewing the plan and to determine over time if there is a greater need for translation or interpretation, I should say, services, and really just to provide interpreters if requested, which is likely something the city would consider doing regardless of this plan. I pulled together some material on interpretation services. The Latino Community Association, which is based in Bend but serves the entire region, provides interpretation services for a fee if requested. There are also kind of phone-based interpretation services. So we really built a plan around using those existing community resources, posting this plan, again, working with staff and monitor to see if there is a higher need over time. So that's what the plan, kind of the content of it.
Okay, anybody have any comments on this or questions? I have one. Where do you find the 50 people that don't?
It was U.S. Census,
I do find it interesting that it's just basically talks about English and Spanish. And,
well, the intent is to go beyond that. So okay. when I said Spanish, that's because when I looked at the data, again, I think I mentioned, I'll have to pull the exact numbers, there's like 28 adults or people over the age of 5 that did not speak English very well or passively. I don't remember the term. So of those 28, 24 were Spanish. I'm not sure what the other 4 were. So again, if we just look at a reasonable expectation given the size of the city, the city's resources, one could argue that there may be requests for interpretation from those Spanish-speaking people. It would be a really stretch if those other four people came forth, but it's possible. Now, if that does occur, there are services available that likely be phone-based interpretation services. There are tools that city staff could use. There's a language interpretation card that I'll provide to Corey for distribution to city staff so they can point to the language, and it, you know, basically allows you to identify what language it is, and then you can get a phone translation service to kind of work with that citizen. So there are ways around it. It's just Spanish is by far, of that very small slice, the majority.
I don't want to leave our student rep out here. Do you have anything to add on any of these three?
Nothing. There's one thing I'd like to ask. If somebody wants this language service, for instance, like tonight, if they had wanted it here, shouldn't they request it in advance so that we can have somebody available for them, or do they just show up and expect us to take care of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In some large governments, they may have staff on hand that could provide that translation or interpretation services. Obviously, the city doesn't, very small staff. And so, yeah, the expectation would be those requests were made in a reasonable amount of time to arrange for that interpretation. Right. So, yes.
A little over a year ago, I think we had a request for American Sign Language, and we had a translator, interpreter in attendance for that meeting. But in advance, it's critical, so we can prepare.
Does anybody have any other questions on any of the three items here? So what we're going to do, we'll look at this over. If we have any questions in the future, for the next 2 weeks, we'll come to Corey, and then we'll pass it on, and then we'll vote with Corey on.
Very good.
Okay,
that works.
More interesting loopholes to jump to.
And not the last one, so be forewarned.
Well, I still like the one where we got to advise our police department. No physical force. We don't even have one.
Yeah, it's hard to do. I know.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Yep. Okay, so Corey, we're all set on that one. Anybody has any questions, we're asking you.
Yeah, let me know. Okay. Andrew and I will continue to refine these, make sure that the state's good with it, and then you'll see when your packets go out in a week and a half, the updated versions that are ready to be passed.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
Okay, number eight.
Thanks, Andrew.
We're having an update on the illegal camping on city property. And I'm sure that's why we have Lieutenant Luke.
I'd like to invite Lieutenant Luke up. I figured he would be an excellent source to be able to describe the issue at hand. And then I've got some updates, some materials in your packets that I put together that I want to work in conjunction with the Sheriff's Department on as we head into October.
Do you want to give an update, or do you want the lieutenant?
Okay.
So,
just kind of
state names. Joe DeLuca, lieutenant with the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office. We do have a little bit of an issue with some people camping off Darlene Way, Reed Road, near the Little Pine Cemetery, and just kind of through there. Talking to my deputies, we've identified at least 6 to 8 camps that are spread out. About a week and a half ago, we had a fire out there that was caused by one of these camps. I went out there today before arriving here and made contact with a few of the campers and tried to get a good idea of, hey, are you going to move on? Are you not going to move on? They also are very, the location is good for them. One, it's close to town. It also, most of them do work, and they work at the pine cone factory. So due to transportation methods, depending on which camp it is. Some have cars, some don't, and they're either walking or riding their bikes back and forth between these camps that are on the city property.
Okay, anybody have any questions at this point for Lieutenant DeLuca? I'd like to know how many are out there and what's the trash situation look like?
The trash situation's bad. Very bad. It's going to take some cleanup. We can probably do some help with that with some of our work crews, and we can maybe make some arrangements. We would just like to start the process of letting them know that, hey, this isn't the place where you need to be. We need to start moving on. Our, they are associated with the crimes that we do have of gas theft, you know, car clouts in the area. It, again, it's nothing major, but it's still an issue that we are having, and we do believe there is a correlation between the camps and the crime on that side of 97.
Okay, Corey, you were gonna...
Yeah, I just want to give an update on the... This really came to at least my attention, or from my understanding, the city's attention in the last few weeks. It may have been an issue prior, but I had... Deputy Kloss reached out. I rode with him personally out through this area probably 2 weeks ago at this point. Figured it was something that we needed to formulate a plan on, especially because October is right around the corner, and we know by the time we get into the middle of November that winter is very close. And so I reached out. I spoke with our land use attorney, Garrett, and also spoke with James Lewis, who's the county property manager. Got some really good perspective from both of them. Was essentially informed from legal counsel that, again, because it's city-owned land, this is about 50% legal and 50%, I'm just going to say it, political, in the sense that, you know, we have the ability to evict people who are essentially trespassing from city-owned property. So what I spoke with James Lewis. The county's dealt with this in basically all corners of the county, some more prevalent than others. And he gave me some really good resources, some templates to work from, and that's what I included in your packet. Essentially, just to frame the issue, I put together a real brief page and a half called Public Land Management Plan for the city land east of the wastewater treatment plant. The city owns two parcels there, and they're 100 acres. I mean, it's a significant tract of land. And this sort of outlines the existing issue, the scenarios, some possible options that we have. And then some action items moving forward, which first and foremost is coordinated partners, and the first partner listed is the Sheriff's Department. Because I'll tell you, even riding in a deputy's car, I didn't feel all that safe out there. So my hat is off to you guys for the work you do every day. And so we definitely have to do that lockstep with the Sheriff's Department. The other draft items that are included in the packet is a notice of illegal camping, and also a notice of road closure, and then a shelter and service providers list. And the goal here really is to try to reach voluntary compliance. So Lieutenant DeLuca already talked about that. He's reached out to these folks and said, hey, are you planning to voluntarily move on your own? Because we want to let them know that they can't be there, but we don't want to show up and say 3 days later, you know, you have to be gone. So I think it's a balance of saying, this is a formal notice. You need to make plans in the next couple of weeks, and the dates in here are somewhat tentative, but this notice does say 7 days. Action will be considered a trespass and subject to legal action and remediation. I think that it makes a lot of sense for maybe the Sheriff's Department to do another round of kind of, again, a voluntary courtesy, saying, hey, this is coming, and then maybe a week or 2 weeks later, you hand out this notice and we post it accordingly. One of the challenges is going to be getting the people to move to a different area, but then also dealing with the leftover, you know, whether that's tents or trailers or trash. So we need to, as staff, we need to try to assess and figure out what kind of funds we have available to help pay for that, but also, I think, working with the county, yep. Juvenile work crew, I'm assuming is what you're referencing.
No, it would be our inmate work crew.
Inmate work crew. That would be we can better, yeah.
We can probably make that happen.
Okay.
We're more than willing to, you know, help out on this matter because it does directly affect us as much as it directly affects you. There is an awful lot of trash that comes with these. And, you know, usually when we do ask them to move, they move. They usually don't move very far. but once we do get them off that property and we take steps to basically not let them come back, if you will, they usually move out to forest land. The federal law enforcement, they have some teeth to what they do, and so this is a process that keeps moving on. A lot of people do bring up, hey, you know, winter's coming. They stay. They literally stay for winter, and it makes it very difficult on us because we can't access them unless we go in on foot, like we're very similar to what they do, and you can see their foot tracks going through the snow and everything, and it's It's quite amazing on how people do live out there. We have, and you know, the numerous dogs, and they're not, you know, the cute little cuddly ones. And then they also have numerous visitors, and so the traffic, and so, and if I went out there today, and there was, they put up small obstacles that maybe you don't notice to keep people from turning down their road. So, you know, this is a problem. We do know at least 6 to 8 camps for sure. We can go out there, one with Jake, and we could probably GPS them, so we mark them so we know, and that way we can keep track of, hey, yep, we got them to move on and go from there. The other thing I can look into with our search and rescue is we do have a drone. I can get a drone to go up and we can grid the area and get a really good idea, because there's going to be a few camps we just don't know about. But for the most part, these people are, they're not what we've experienced in Bend and Redmond. These people are, you know, they've been here in Lapine for quite a few years. They just haven't been camping out there for this amount of time. They've had houses and other things, but this has become a very easy way for them to live a little bit cheaper, and considering for us those living conditions might not be ideal, for them they're perfectly happy.
Okay, Council, any comments here?
Just a couple things that come to mind. One, I'm aware that they're out there. Mm-hmm. Joe and I have discussed it. I also helped out with the warming shelter last year, and social services in the area, a couple of people volunteered. They got them a way to survive because they weren't going to come in. You know, they weren't going to come into the warming shelter. They're ready to buckle down and make it through the winter out there, regardless of the extreme temperatures we had even last year. But one of the thoughts that just came to mind when you were talking was the fact that they have a employer in common, that the Pine Cone Factory does employ them. And I just recently saw a video where a group called C12 went in and helped with a solution on, and it wasn't local, so I mean C12 is local, but they put out a video where they helped with a solution on an employer who was employing refugees. And kind of similar situation, how do they bring social services in because they have a common employer, mm-hmm. and help with that, you know, bring social services in to talk to them at their employment office about how do we get you help so that this isn't a continuing issue, because we are going to move them. I think we need to move them. I think that's important. I think it's important for multiple reasons, the safety of our community, them not trashing the lands, the panhandling and the crime, all of it goes together. But they're just going to move and become someone else's problem. So let's try and make it some kind of solution, or at least make that effort that, you know, and I realize a list of shelters and things like that, Corey and I talked, there's not a whole lot locally, you know, and if they're working out here, then, you know, Bethlehem Inn's not an option. So maybe there's something else we can brainstorm together and come up with.
Yes, there are some different options. The hard part with the Pine Cone Factory is it's very seasonal. So it's only for a period of time that they're there. I don't know when they stop their production, but so that's the one thing that's going to be a hard part with the Pine Cone Factory, because they do hire a lot of people, but it's not for the full year, and then they close up shop.
And the similar situation that I was told about or that I saw the video on was a pallet factory, which I'm assuming probably is year-round, but it's still kind of that factory environment. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Stu, any comments on this one?
Well, we all know it's a problem. You know, my concern is how that. No, you turned me off.
Just speak low.
Okay. You know, the vandalism, unfortunately, that goes along with it. I see them every day. Mm-hmm. You know, on one hand, we have a responsibility, but on the other hand, they have a responsibility. I think we do need to try to work with them. Evidently, Corey and your office is working great together.
Absolutely.
With each other. I like the idea of tracking where they're going and where they've been, and maybe, you know, a more, I don't, you know, is it really a law enforcement responsibility to do this, or is it social services?
From the sheriff's office point of view, we're not just looking at it as a law enforcement purpose, we're looking at a community service. You know, there is a lot of resources out there. The problem is most of those resources aren't been Redmond for these individuals. I will tell you, like I said before, these people are not the people that are coming through and going, oh, Lapine's a beautiful place, I'm going to stay here. These are Lapine residents. I mean, they've been here for a long time. This has just been now their way of life. So they are hardy people. And so giving them certain options and, you know, just like the warming shelter, that's what we're used to. You know, we can manage this, you know. And so it's going to be very interesting because we don't want to just disperse them, but we also want to be able to figure out on how we can kind of contain this. And at what point in time, once these camps do start, and we've seen that throughout the county, they are calling family and friends, and before you know it, you know, there's a few more coming in, a few more staying. And this is one of those things we would kind of like to say, hey, no, we're trying to address this problem with providing options for these people.
Okay, Mr. Greiner, any comments?
Yeah, I know that in this list of shelter and service providers that you're right, everything here is listed as Bend or out of this area. So if we even got them to go there, all we're doing is transferring our problem to them. So we need to find some sort of a solution here. And I'm wondering if there's some way that if there's a campground available someplace where we could kind of encourage them to move to this one area and maintain it, make sure that they maintain it. I mean, I know that I feel sorry for them because I know what it would be like if I was out and didn't have a home to go to at night and didn't have warm a place and everything, and it just.
I'll tell you this. First and foremost, these are people that have made this choice, and if we decide to put them all in one place, that's great for my job because I know where they're at. And I believe we've already done that before. It was called Whispering Pines, I believe. We had it there. So that is something that, you know, I that would be very difficult to do. And then also, my personal beliefs and from what I've seen, once we start enabling, then we start attracting more and more and more. And, you know, one of the things I've talked with Corey about is the panhandling, you know, ordinance here that we can get put into place. I mean, those are all the small steps. For the person that we literally had a homeless camp right across from the high school. It was in the trees there before it was all thinned out, and there was anywhere from 5 to 6 people living there right across from our school system. And I'm gonna tell you, there are some of these people are not they have issues. We have, I think, 2 sex offenders that are living out there, and they literally have living behind Darlene Way. I mean, so we've given these people have been given different opportunities. We're going to continue to give them different opportunities, but it's up for them to take those opportunities.
Do you have any comments on this?
No, I just know it's a big problem, and people living behind Darlene Way, that's not an address. You can't, like, say you live there, and there are people that do that. And a lot of people don't accept the opportunities that we do give them, so I mean, you kind of got to crack the whip at some point and tell them where they need to go. And not making it someone else's problem, but just making them know that it's a problem and that we've got to handle it. So.
Very, you know, I went to some training down in Arizona, and Houston police were there, and they discussed their homeless problem and how they attempted to rectify it. And if you let them keep their job, which in this case in Houston was standing on corners and holding out a sign, which you'd be surprised, they earn over $100 a day, and they can go back to their tent and take part in their substance abuse, whatever that it is, they haven't hit rock bottom. They're not going to ask for the help. They're not going to want the help. So we're on that fine line where we want to do that. The other thing is, too, with these homeless camps, and I won't put you on the spot, but juveniles frequent those places for alcohol, and they, you know, hey, I'll get you a case of beer if you get me a case of beer, and, you know, they do cause other minor issues. That is an issue, and we do periodically catch kids coming from these areas, and we're like, hey, you're not, why are you back here? And so, you know, we're trying to take away some of those opportunities. And, you know, if they can, if we do move them on to Bend, and I'm a Lapine resident, if we do move them on to Bend and they have those services there for them, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'd like to say that might be aggressive about this, of course, but this is going to be an ongoing problem forever. So when they make up these rules, they're going to be homelessness is around forever. So we just want to make sure we can follow through no matter where they land and whatever. And we're going to a conference. I think everybody's going to a conference, and there's like 3 workout sessions on homeless home. You know, so maybe we can pick up some ideas from these things to them. Of course, we will pass them on. Every city has the problem. So, but I think we have to be aggressive with this one. Particular one, I mean, part of it is by showing example too, you know, because we really have picked up the pace on this in the city part anyways. You know, the county has, but so let's move ahead.
Yeah, we've seen this issue to a degree. The difference in what we call it in most regards is code enforcement. There's people living in trailers on private property, and there's a whole different set of laws and processes that we have to step through to get to a point. I mean, I'm working with Chris Deboni closely on a property up on Railroad, and I mean, he's been giving me updates, and it's been 6 months. It started in March, so I mean, that was 6 months ago, and they're still there. There's 3 trailers right there, and so the specific issue here is that, you know, it's on city property, and there's obviously other issues that come along with that, but I think what we need to do is staff and the Sheriff's Department need to work really closely to see what we can set in motion in October, and then depending on how much we can clear that area, the way that you can try to offset it is by, and I put in a template notice of road closure, is to block access. Because networks of roads have been built, and they're not roads, they're trails that were built by people who've accessed that land over the years. It was transferred from BLM to the city, I think, a handful of years ago. And then the other item would be, and the timing actually makes a lot of sense, would be to look at thinning that parcel next spring. Helps mitigate fire damage, it helps open up visibility, so it makes it less of a place that people want to go and can get away and hide. And the timing in terms of us doing our wastewater projects that will ideally be breaking ground in spring of 19. So, you know, thinning it next spring and having it be ready for the following year makes a lot of sense. That's all depends on what we can get done next month. But again, I think if we have the legal ability to make people move, we just need to know that we're doing it with a sense of conscientiousness, but also, I think, with Mr. Mayor, a sense of aggressiveness.
Yeah, I know a couple of people that are out there, and it's people that's been kicked out of Cato. A couple of them come to the St. Vincent de Paul's for their stuff to take back. I mean, so it's, they just float around. So, yeah, whatever we can do, we gotta do.
And I'd like to see us include the schools in this, because I do know that there are some students out there. So it does affect their school life also.
Sure.
So we need to reach out to the school system also.
I talked to the fan personnel for the schools already that operates down in Lapine. They'll be easily included, and they're very, very knowledgeable on this subject. So it'll be great.
Okay, so
based on the draft documents, based on what Lieutenant Lucas shared, I think we have a plan to probably be getting some notices out early October, really, seeing how the couple weeks in the middle of October play out, and then having a plan as we head into November if some people have not moved along, right? So we'll continue to give updates. Our staff will be working with Sheriff's Department closely, and I plan for somewhat of an update or an opportunity to ask questions at council meetings, or if you'd like to check in, obviously, any time in between, don't hesitate.
As far as any requirements that the council has to take, we aren't making any resolutions, ordinances, or anything.
No, but I'm really looking for a sense of direction and consensus that everyone's comfortable with what we've talked about tonight. And
I think you got to move ahead just as we talked.
The one thing that I caution everybody on is you got to be careful when you start posting these notices and going out and talking to these people, because you never know. I mean, everybody in this area has got a gun or something, and you just have to be careful. I'm serious.
I mean, it's not us.
It's nothing to be...
Nobody should be going out there without.
Nope, we're going to make arrangements to do that. We will work hand in hand, and I'm going to tell you, the sheriff's office, we've been extremely happy with the council on working with Corey and getting stuff done. Good. It's been a great relationship, and it's going to continue.
Good. Well, it's great having you guys here.
Yep. And I appreciate the comment of working with fan advocates, and it's hard. I mean, it's a hard mentally to make the decision to ask people to move when you know they're struggling and you have compassion for them, but at the same time, you have to do the best for our city as a whole too, and not become a welcome mat for those types of situations to breed further.
And understand, I don't want you to think that we're going to come in there strong arm of the law. No, that's not intention at all. And we are going to provide them different places they can go. And like I said, there's other opportunities for them. There's other places that they can also go. And like, if this is just an area that's starting to become inundated, that needs to be addressed.
Okay. So we're moving ahead. Great. Sounds great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, sir.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. That's going to be an ongoing hard one. Okay. We're going to discuss a little bit of what's going to happen at the joint work session with the Schuylkill County Commissioner.
Just want to start with the basic logistics. We have scheduled for Tuesday, October 17th, and it's scheduled to be here. And the time has adjusted slightly, and I sent an email to council earlier. I just want to see if 4:30 starting at that day works for everybody. That's the plan right now. We're not going to have a council meeting. It's just going to be a joint city-county meeting, so there will be no regular council meeting or work session either before or after. It'll just be that meeting at 4:30 if that works for everyone's.
When did the email go out?
About 2 hours ago. 2.5 hours ago. Yeah.
So I want to apologize to council. Part of that was me. I made a commitment through October, November, and the first couple weeks of December. On Tuesdays, I have to be somewhere at 6 p.m. And it's in La Pine, so I can leave 10 minutes till and be there, or 5 minutes till and be there, but I was afraid 5 would be pushing it too quick. So I asked Corey to move it back to 4. He talked to the county, and apparently 4:30 was the compromise.
If we have to get up and leave, if it drags out, then just have to leave.
Right, and I'll say that at the beginning that I'm going to have to excuse myself.
What was the date?
17. Yeah, we worked with council probably at least a month.
So, Tuesday?
Tuesday. Right, yeah.
Mr. Greger? Yeah. Okay with you?
Tuesday, October 17th at 4:30 is fine with me.
Okay. And you can get back.
I'll have to get back.
Okay.
You want me to...
If you don't mind.
Tell what I've... Okay, that's one of my meetings with our Commissioner Baney, and we want to start talking about some serious land issues. And one of them is, of course, the first and foremost is the industrial park. And these are things taking over the land that the county now has control of. And most of the commissioners are on board with that one, but we'll have to bring it up and discuss it, because I assume they're James Lewis, their land management, their city manager, and the only drawback on all of this is if they want to stop off us taking care of some maintenance on roads. And on that issue, I don't think we have to worry about it. But we'll discuss that. That's a discussion issue. And the next one is that there's alleyways through the city that are not being maintained. They're supposed to be maintained by the county, and they aren't, so we'll discuss that one maybe, whether the city wants to maintain them or how that's going to work out. The other one is Wickiup Junction. I talked, of course, we thought that was going to be a lot bigger park and ride area up there. Now that the ODOT project's not going through, it's going to stay the same. But Tammy Beeney actually says the county has funds for parks. And it's not a lot of funds to do a huge park, but it's just sitting there and hasn't been used, and maybe we can get into that. So, you know, my thing is, and I think the council knows, I mentioned enough, I'd like to make that a nice looking park up there.
The park and ride?
The park and ride. You know, there's picnic tables there now, but there's no trash cans, no nothing. It's just a bunch of weeds up there, basically. And the next thing is the land above Crescent Creek. It was in a land swap deal regarding water and everything. I mean, there's a lot of entities that even, I mean, Corey's starting to look into it. There's just a lot of stuff to get that cleared up so that we can use that for any development whatsoever. But it's going to probably take 5 years to clear it all up, but we got to start. You know, we got to start somewhere on it. So we want to bring that up. And that definitely will be some swapping of maintenance on roads. But this is, and her and I talked, we talked with ODOT, we need to come up with a 5 or 10 year plan here. So we know, so the city can be prepared to take over roads, because right now we don't have the money to do it. These are all discussion items, but I think we've got to get started on them, or they're just going to sit there like the industrial park did, stagnant. Nothing being done. So that's the main guts of the meeting that her and I discussed. And I've also talked to Tony DeMone on it and Phil Henderson, and they want to get this whole thing moving. Because they do this in Redmond, because Redmond still has tons of land owned by the county. They actually meet every 4 times a year to discuss different items. And Tammy thinks we ought to do that. If we need to cancel it, it's easier to cancel it than schedule it. So they're looking to come down here more and take over some of this land, because actually they don't want it. They don't want to deal with it. So the industrial park, I think, will be a great discussion. I don't think that's an impossible task. That'll be a good share of the meeting, probably. And then we have some other items that we wanted to discuss.
Yeah, they're largely connected to those. So, you know, for the industrial park plan, an update from Ryan Cole, the new economic development manager, just his opportunity to address both boards, because his position's funded by the council, by the city, and by the county. I talked with Tom on Friday, I believe it was, because Tammy talked to Tom. When I say Tom Anderson, the county administrator. And we talked about a few of these things. There may have been even a couple more, but I don't know if Tammy knew, I don't know if some of them were intended to be agenda items or just kind of bigger, broader discussion. So, long story short, Sharon Ross with the county is putting together a draft agenda based on what the mayor just spoke about. And when that is shared with me, which I'd expect in the next couple of days, I'll circulate that out to council and get additional feedback or input to help inform that. And we won't meet again in time. I'll see all of you, LLC, and obviously talk well advanced for that agenda going out, but we will only have one more meeting on October 11th before that 17th meeting. So I guess the agenda would go out probably that Thursday, the 12th. But anyways, it's coming up, it's a few weeks away, and if anyone has other potential items that they think are worth discussing, I think we're all prepared for a couple-hour meeting and a good opportunity to really talk about some items. And
it's just that if they're coming down here, we want to make use of it. And this is sort of where everything's leaning. So, that's it. And I just, I want people to be prepared. That's why all the commissioners sort of have an idea of what's going to go on. And I wanted the council, of course, prepared too, so if they have any other ideas.
I just have a question on the park. That's the first I've heard of it. Has the I mean, because that wouldn't be a city park, it would be a, would it be county maintained all of a sudden? Would the parks department be involved? What is
these are the discussions we have to have right now. Right now, it's not maintained by anybody except for the mayor going down and with a lawnmower and mowing it down there. Different people around there have talked, they'd like to see a park. It's getting off of the Burgess, headed to the, it's a prime example of what La Pointe is. And that'll blend in with someday, hopefully, we'll have a bike path walkway connecting the two.
I remember that property that's not owned by the city.
Right.
It's not owned by the county.
There's some confusion about, yes. I think it's in the right of way.
It's in the right of way, and it was something that was adopted as a park by the previous administration. The mayor needs to go down there and take care of it. So everybody assumed that it was a city park. It's not.
No.
So I think what the mayor is alluding to is somebody needs to take responsibility for the place and make it a warm, inviting place.
Because it's in our city.
Yeah.
So these are all just discussions.
I mean, it's going to be a work session.
Yeah, it's
right?
A work session. Just to kick discussion.
I just had never heard of it. I just asked about it.
Yeah, it doesn't have a name. It's just called the park.
What I think county staff and city staff are prepared for is probably some action items for staff to look into and to work on. A couple things leading up to the meeting so that, again, the council and the commissioner are prepared to talk about the details. Because each one of these, is none of them are as simple on the face of it as one might think. So the land north of Crescent Creek, again, that's tied in with a groundwater mitigation program that the county's created. And they've had public meetings over the last 15 years. And they've refined that in the past 10 years. And then the economy went to the tank, and that threw a wrench in their entire plan. And now the economy's back. And so, again, I was floored. You know, I sat through an hour with their administration, their planning folks, and got a lot of the history and background. And I'm going, wow, there is a lot rolled into that. Unlike the industrial park, I think that's a little cleaner in the sense that the land was given to the county essentially just for economic development purposes. So I don't think the county's funding any specific programs. They're not trying to deal with a mitigated groundwater issue. So that might be an easier transaction to talk about. I was debating about whether taking some time tonight, and I didn't ultimately end up doing it, to talk with council about the road issue. Because the county, at least the staff, I don't know the commission in particular, but my conversations with the staff have been, and Jake and I's conversation with the staff at the county have been, hey, when are you guys taking these roads? What's going on? What's the plan? You know, and somewhat in jest, but you know, we talk about little things, odds and ends, and they say, well, yeah, we'll do that when you take the roads. We'll do that when you take the roads. So that is a big elephant in the room, and I don't know, again, we should just be prepared to understand that at some point, again, the right way for it to happen will be phased in over time, so that we're prepared to
deal with it. But that's also the staff up there. That's not necessarily the commissioners.
And I'm curious. Okay. I'll be sitting in
this for discussion.
Okay,
I'll be sitting and listening.
Okay, that's sure. That's takes care of that item.
Okay.
Okay, let's go other matters.
We one more out of 10.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Just real briefly on the discussion on interviews and appointments for city vacancies. So at our last meeting 2 weeks ago, we talked about leaving it open and not setting a date where positions will close, not setting a date for interviews. We have three applications for each vacancy. So three for the city council vacancy and three for the urban renewal vacancy. Two of the applications happen to be one person. Is interested in both. So five people, I guess we could say. I think it might be a wise direction to head for us to plan on interviews October 11th, and maybe say that we're going to leave the vacancies open until the Thursday or the Wednesday prior to that. So that could be October 4th. If anyone submits an application by 5 o'clock October 4th, it'll be included in council consideration, and they'll be given an opportunity to come and interview with council on October 11th.
Let me just say, added to that, the last COCO meeting, Redmond has an opening, and Prineville has an opening, and they have three applications each. Mm-hmm. So I guess we shouldn't feel too bad.
I think three is a good number, and if one or two more even come in the next week and a half, that would be a good thing too. So I guess staff doesn't want to make that decision without council feeling comfortable with that, and then theory would be then if we interview on the 11th, council could be in a position to make an appointment on October 25th, maybe before the work session, so they can participate in that work session at the end of the month.
Any comments? Anybody?
I'm a little worried it would be too much of a hurry to set a date. And without seeing the applications, I don't know the quality of the candidates that have applied, so I can't really speak to, I mean, in the past, I know that there was a person that always applied for every city council open position, and that, you know, it wasn't necessarily a qualified candidate, so.
So would you like staff to send the applications?
Well, I want to hear from you.
Yeah, I'd like to have staff send the applications to council, and then council maybe review them. I'm with Connie on this one. I don't want to put a date specific yet. I'm not, yeah.
I agree. I think it should come to the council.
Okay, Greg.
Send the applications out. No plans for the 11th.
No plans for the 11th.
That works out pretty well.
I'm sorry.
That just works out kind of well, because on the 8th I'll be getting my tonsils out. So.
Wise decision.
Hey, I might not be talking a lot.
But also when we get their applications, those are personal documents, so we don't want to be sharing them with everybody in the city either,
or discussing them.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's just for us to look at privately, personally. And then,
Yeah, I'll write an email. I think all I would want is, again, I won't set a date on it, but at some point, just direction again, whether it's just checking back in at the October 11th meeting, that's fine, or prior, if they review them and say, if the council member reviews, then lets me know and says, hey, I'm comfortable with these three applicants, I'd like to move forward with interviews, then that's enough, and then we can go.
We really shouldn't be making up our mind until they're interviewed.
Correct.
Just to see if we feel that they're qualified to be interviewed. Is basically
it. Well, or
if you feel we need to leave the building.
If it's not a homeless person that's living on our property. Okay, ended on that one. Okay, Corey, got that?
Yep, got it.
So one thing about that, there's nothing to prevent us to say that so-and-so made an application, is there? I mean, if you can say that they made one, but you don't have to say anything about it, in case somebody else might want to know.
I would just keep it all internal.
Yeah, I just keep it to ourselves.
Everything?
Yeah.
At this stage.
I mean, if you're around the city, most people know who's applied.
I mean, if you want to be technical, essentially anything that the city receives becomes a public document.
Right.
So, I mean, in theory, you could say it's public, but I'd say more of just a courtesy thing. Except the time
if the individual wants people to know, that individual will tell people.
Okay, moving on. The added agenda item.
Mr. Mayor, I need to recluse myself from this discussion because it directly affects me financially.
Okay, did you want to?
Okay. I can stay.
Move now or?
Okay. You can stay as long as you.
Yeah.
Okay. Because again, we're not making any decisions tonight. I have been working on preparing the RFP, but in the past the city has put out projects for bid, right? Whether it's the First Street Improvement Projects, the Wikia Junction, not the Wikia Junction, well, it's the Wikia Junction, the Wikia Lift Station Project. We do public projects, that's what we do as a public entity. And so one of the services that we use in the Central Oregon area is the Premier Builders Exchange, which is a It's a site that developers or prospective consultants or contractors use to find projects that they want to do. And so public entities across the region use that, and they post bid documents and bid packages so that there's one place for, again, those contractors or consultants to find that information. I've been told that certain cities, Bend included, I believe, uses Premier Builders Exchange exclusively. So what they would do is they would send all their information, they'd send their bid package, the addendums to Premier Builders Exchange. Premier Builders Exchange would post it on their website, and then the city would, on their own website or on any, you know, their announcement, you know, that's published in the Bend Bulletin or the Daily Journal of Commerce, would say, hey, we're advertising for this project, it's open for this amount of time, you know, if you want information, visit Premier Builders Exchange. And so there's one point, there's one source for everyone to get information. And what makes it different for our conversation is that the owner of that business is Council Breeze. And so the discussion that council needs to look at, and I've talked with Jeremy Green, our legal counsel, a bit on this, and I think I've articulated to him the potential issues, although his are fairly high level, and I'll get to those. But if council would like the city to use exclusively Premier Builders Exchange, and again, by way of example, with this RFP, what we would do is we would send the information to them, which we plan to do anyways. We use them for that service, and we pay them for that. And what that then means is that if someone goes to that site, they don't pay to access the documents. So if whether two people look at it or 200 people look at it, Premier Builders Exchange is not getting a financial benefit from that. The question really revolves around, there's a couple things, but for council consideration, I think it's about the exclusivity, it's a mouthful, about using just Premier Builders Exchange. So again, that would mean that instead of on the RFP, us saying, you know, you can access the documents on the city website or, you know, other locations, you need to go to Premier Builders Exchange to download the documents. And in terms of bid projects, obviously you want as much exposure as possible to drive down the lowest bid to get the best deal for the city. And also there's potential benefit in terms of knowing who has downloaded the documents, because a lot of times with these bid packages, what will happen is that it's not going to happen with the RFP, but you can imagine, say, when we bid the construction projects for water, wastewater, it's going to be a lot of documents, a lot of addendums, and things change, especially with a big project like that, and you have to make updates. And so to get the word out to every prospective bidder that they all have the same information when preparing the bid packages is really important. So I've been talking a lot. I hope that all kind of made sense. The other element that I want to mention that Jeremy sent me is, and I, again, it's fairly high level. I didn't, you know, ask him to call in or obviously to be present or anything like that. Would be, you know, his concerns are essentially around the potential conflict of interest concerns. Exclusively using Council Breeze's website, it may constitute, or at minimum present the appearance of constituting the use of official position for financial gain. And so those are the two issues that he mentioned, but at the same time, in my conversations with him, again, if with her recusing herself from the discussion, if council sees fit that the city essentially sets a policy that we use Premier Builders Exchange exclusively, then we can do that with your direction. In regards to the RFP, what I'm looking for is either a consensus or some direction either way tonight. And then a formal motion if the council would like this to be a policy on October 11th for the RFP, but also for other projects moving forward. So it's not just considering the RFP, I think it's considering in general, where can the public access city bid packages and documents. So again, I'm sorry, I just said a lot. I think I fairly summarized it.
Fairly,
sorry.
Okay, we got to have some comments from, can we start with you this time, John?
Well, in my opinion, I think it's a conflict of interest to use Premier Builder. That's my personal opinion, and strictly because Connie's on the council. Whether she makes any money from it or not, that is immaterial. It still promotes her business, and that's gaining from her being on the council. My personal opinion.
Stu?
Well, I guess, no. My concern would be, is the part regarding the exclusive part of the whole thing.
That's really the And that's really the crux of the question as well.
So the way
because it appears that the city is saying you need to go to that website to download everything. So that's where my concern.
So the reason for that versus having it available in multiple places is the more and other agencies that do similar business to mine can go to my website and download it. So it's not excluding them. It's just saying that anybody that gets it has to get it from Premier Builders Exchange's website. And the reason for that is because we have the capability to track who gets the project. That benefits the city. Also, if they go to the city's website and download it and something about the project changes from the time it goes out to bid until it bids, there's no way to notify those people from the city's website. Whereas mine, they register on the website, and when they download the documents, they get notification if anything changes, whereas the other websites don't have that capability.
And right there, the city needs to change the website. The city needs to notify people when there are changes.
So just so that you're aware, I do this service for the city of
right.
Bend, the city of Sisters,
that.
The city
you
of
You don't Washington. Sit on their city council.
I understand that. But to that argument, we use your garbage service too.
But so. I'm not asking the city to put my company on the website saying it's exclusive.
Right.
Okay. So, let me comment out of here. We don't want any arguments.
That's fine.
Have we run into any problems the way we're doing it right now?
No, we haven't ran into any problems.
What would be the, is there any negatives if we just don't keep it the same way? It's still on Connie's website.
It is. I think, and I'm translating a lot of what, because I'm not in the industry. I'm not a contractor, or I'm not someone who runs one of these website things in the industry. So I think Connie speaks best for herself in making that value add in regards to either speaking to the benefit to the city of La Pine in particular, or this, again, other jurisdictions she works with. It's reasonable to think of scenarios where it could potentially harm the city. I haven't heard of any specifically. It's definitely reasonable to think of instances where it could help the city. And again, I haven't heard of that specifically, but we're not bidding hundreds of projects. We've only done, a handful. Again, that's not to say there's not value there. It's just I don't have a lot of data to work with personally.
Okay, I guess my opinion would be that I don't want to give the public or anybody any advantage to think we're doing something unethical. And to me, I could see people thinking that way on this. That's all. I just want us to be, and everybody knows me, I want to be totally open. I don't want to think that there's anything behind closed doors going on or anything like this. And I just am leery of that happening. That's something.
So, two things that I'd like to address. One, I did mention to Corey that I'd like Eric Huffman to speak on my behalf because he understands the financial impact of using my website versus not using my website that it could have for the city, and him and I have discussed that, and that's why the city started using my website for my services in the first place, is by not doing so. They've gotten less bids on projects in the past, so before they used my website. And so Eric actually paid for my services before I was a counselor, and then had the city pay him back for my services so that he could put it out there and benefit the city more as the city's engineer. He did that years ago before I was even on the council. And then the city adopted starting to use my website to advertise their projects in addition to posting it on their website. When we discuss the financial gain, I make very minimal. I'd be happy to produce charges, but basically the cost of my services to the city is about what it would cost to take the documents down and make one copy of it. So the financial gain is extremely minimal. We're talking about the RFP would probably be under my $10 minimum. You know, so we're not talking about hundreds of dollars. When we do talk about the construction construction documents for something like the wastewater projects, it's probably going to be a couple hundred dollars, but it's still not going to be substantial. So there is definitely a financial benefit to the city for using my website. Contractors end up on the same page. My website is familiar to contractors. And Lapine would not be the only city that's adopted the exclusivity. So
may I ask, is this the are you the only contractor or the only company that provides this service in the entire state?
No, I'm not.
So what difference would it be if we went to somebody who's not on the council rather than somebody that is on the council? Is there an advantage or disadvantage one way or the other?
I'm the only one in Central Oregon that has the number of public entities that I do, the multiple cities on the website. So it's a common place in Central Oregon to go to look for those documents. So people check my website regularly versus Portland or DJC or other entities like that.
Anything else, Stu?
My concern is perception. That is the only thing I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
Because I know Connie, you know, is one of the most upfront people I know. But it's a perception. And I wish Jeremy would have been here.
I think what I can do is I can forward the email from Jeremy to everyone. It's actually from Alan, but Jeremy CC.
Well,
I had a conversation with both of them. If I can forward it to council. And then if you'd like to individually reach out to Jeremy with questions, you can do that.
I have done that with him with my business regarding the same exact thing, and I would personally feel more comfortable talking to him and getting a direct answer from him. I'm sure everything is fine, but just like with my company, I want to make sure it is up front, and then I'd be happy with it.
Okay, this isn't something that's urgent, so I guess we're going to have to just put it on hold for a little bit.
The only thing I'd like to say is that we do want to get the RFP out. Now, we can move forward with the RFP, and the way it's written right now, it says that you can find the RFP and the City Water Wastewater Master Plans at City Hall on the city website or at Premier Village Exchange. So we can move forward with that document, and then we can essentially table this discussion, council can do some more research, get some more information, and then make a decision as a policy moving forward for other projects to see if this is something that council wants to adopt.
Yep.
That allows us to move forward in the next week.
Yep. Okay.
I did, when I was sent to Sisters, when Rick invited me to Sisters to be a new council person, and we went through talking with legal counsel and all of those different things, this discussion did come up. Although the exclusivity part did not, he was aware of my services too, because I service Sisters as well. And so he was aware of what I do and how I do it to other people. And so I probably will address Jeremy too and just ask him about why the having it on just the one page changes it, because other than excluding myself and acknowledging, you know, the financial benefit, then he said I wouldn't have had to do anything different. So
would there be an advantage to say we've got a big project like our water sewer project that we've got going? Would we have an advantage by seeing to it that other companies that reach out to larger cities where we might be able to get a better price at the end or a better contract than we can from just the people that go to your website.
So my website is not exclusive to Central Oregon. I actually cover the entire state, and I get people from all over the United States accessing my website. The project is advertised through the Daily Journal of Commerce and other well-known public. It doesn't stop the advertisement. It's just about where the documents are accessed from. So I get multiple people from all over. Like I said, there's other public agencies that use mine for that, for just this purpose.
Okay,
that's just. Yeah, a lot of the requirements too are associated with. There's Oregon revised statutes that require the city as a public entity to notice in a certain way and in a publication of general circulation and do those types of requirements. And then, as a corollary to looking at this, I would just verify with the state and federal funders, making sure that that's not an issue. I don't think it would be again because it's not. You're still doing all the same public noticing. It's just where the documents are housed. So that's just another wrinkle that, as city manager, I feel I'd want to look into. I don't think it's an issue, but.
Okay, we'll just take a look for a short while.
So I'll send the email out, and then I'm gonna CC Jeremy probably in the email. I'll let him know that I'm doing this, and everyone's aware and free and able to contact him and talk through it, and we can bring it up here in a couple weeks. The next
sounds great. Okay, moving ahead, public comments. Oh boy.
Be careful.
I'll let this missus in the back go first, throw it over here. Yeah.
I would just like to make a comment in support of what you said when Deputy DeLuca was talking about thinning trees in remote areas of land that the city owns, where it's appropriate, where there's funding. And in particular, the area that you were talking about, there are quite a few people that walk their dogs out in that area, I being one of them. And I was not aware until you had this meeting that there were maybe some questionable areas that I shouldn't walk in alone. So I think for people that do walk out there, especially during the winter, because it is plowed out there on that road so well by Jake, that people take their dogs out there, and if it was thin, you would be able to see more and possibly feel more safe. So I was just wanting to comment on that.
Thank you.
Corey, I wanted to say how relieved I was to hear your thoughts that taking over county roads should be carefully considered and phased in. If Stu might remember, back when I was still mayor, this topic came up at a joint meeting with the county commissioners. It was the last meeting that we had when, I don't know if I remember his name, was still a commissioner.
Luke?
Yes, when Dennis Luke was still a commissioner. Anyway, Rick made the comment then, he was our manager then, made the comment that periodically the county will push for this and they'll make a big push for it, and they will make it sound like we are out and out obligated to take over these roads. And so I appreciate your caution on that, and I'm sure that you're thinking very deeply about the budgetary impacts. And I don't see how we can take over even one paved county road at this time. I think that's kind of in the works, maybe one or two of them already.
Not in the works. One of the conversations been around taking over roads that are starting to look and feel more urban, right? So the county, honestly, when you talk with their public works manager or their engineer, and you start showing them sidewalks and streetscapes, you know, their eyes roll back in their head because they're used to big based roads with culverts, and you know that's what they do. Those are county roads, and so the conversation probably Huntington, you know, would be one. That would be south of Crescent Creek as you head into downtown would be a conversation point. Anyways, it's nothing's in the works right now.
Well, I just liked to hear the voice of caution on that, and I think it's something too that should be brought up with budget committee, you know, during the budget process and everything, and looked at very extensively. We also have people who are not on paved roads that are now, as you know, wanting to get their roads paved, and how much of it can we handle? So it's going to be a tough one. I appreciate the county, and I appreciate everything that they do for us. And so I would like for the city to be able to do as much, you know, back for the county as we can, but there has to be that balance, as you know.
Well, this is a long-range plan, but we got to start somewhere. That's the whole idea.
Right,
got to start talking about
that. Well, and you need the discussion, too, for good faith.
Okay, staff comments. Corey?
I don't have much other than I think everyone's aware that LOC is starting on Thursday morning. That's the reason why we rescheduled this meeting to Monday night. I'll see all of you there. Let me know if you have questions leading up to that. So I'll be chatting with Ashley and Holly a little bit, making sure that I'm prepared to deal with issues if they pop up. I'll probably have the city credit card just, you know, as a last case, a worst case scenario, something popped up. And I'll still be putting together a staff memo. Maybe I'll try to expedite that and get it out maybe Thursday instead of Friday, just so everyone has it, can look at it while they're at the conference if they have some spare time. Busy, October's gonna be very busy. We've got a lot of joint meetings. I outlined some of those that are coming up. We actually moved, I believe we've talked to the council about this. We moved the joint park and rec meeting into November, again, just because we've got so much going on in October. So we'll continue to send updates. I think you sent an update, an email on that yesterday. So we'll stay in touch on that. But just a lot of little things in motion. Looking to get the community development director job announcement up, hopefully in a couple days. Talking with legal counsel one last time tomorrow on that. Had Tammy, our city planner, got the updated version that she made some comments on right here. Just a couple minor tweaks, really good stuff that she added, and look forward to hopefully getting some quality applicants on that as we head into October.
Okay, Jake?
You bet. A lot of topics tonight. Big focus on the ODOT project, obviously. There's another ODOT project that's still in the works that's very much moving forward. It's the West Side project, streetscape improvements. We're doing a lot of work with that, a lot of meetings, trying to push forward to get some bid documents ready for that project to go up for bid. And our staff's been very much involved with that. And we also did some work today with ODOT on the highway, did some potholing, so look at some more stuff that could be in conflict with the project. And was glad to find out that there wasn't stuff there. We did some potholing and found there wasn't a storage tank underneath the highway. It was just an existing water main that was cased in steel pipe, which was kind of what I thought it was. But I told, hey, I got a backer truck. I can backer that and find out exactly what it is for you. And we did that this morning. you've noticed a lot of work on the St. Charles project crossing Huntington. Unfortunately, yeah, it's a lot of crossings through there, but they are very much needed, and there's some infrastructure improvements that they're dealing with that are very much needed for the town. We should start seeing that slow down, those crossings, because they've done pretty much most of the work crossing Huntington. You won't see those ditches paved till the project's near the end of completion. They're going to repave that whole section, and just not just the ditches, but that whole section of Huntington is going to get wider and new pavement through there. So just be patient for this project. It's going to be a really good one for the community. Yeah, it's slowing us down on our commutes, but in the long run, I think it's going to work out well. Public Works fleet, I ordered that truck. It should be here, I'm hoping, beginning of November. It's, you know, it's coming from the factory. It's going to be a brand new truck, so crew's excited. Just wanted to extend a thank you for that. Let us do that. Times have been very busy, and another addition to our fleet would be very much appreciated. So thank you for that. Prepping for winter right now. Starting to get our stuff ready for winter. I hate to say the dirty word, but it's around the corner, so doing a lot of stuff to get ready for winter. And our GIS system is up and running. I've been working with that, doing some field work, playing around, troubleshooting with our consultant, throwing stuff back at him. Hey, I don't like this, or I do like this. Can we improve on this? Stuff like that. So yeah, busy times.
Do we have a contract for snow removal yet?
We have an existing contract with the council.
Covers this year, and then we'll put it back out the following summer.
Okay, Allie.
Nothing.
Okay. Council comments. Let's start right down here.
Yeah, the joint meeting with the commissioners, that's the 17th of October. Yeah. So I probably won't be talking a lot. Might be a little quiet as well as the 11th meeting. If I do end up showing up to the 11th meeting, it kind of depends how I feel or if I'm not asleep. But yeah, other than that, nothing to share.
Okay. Mr. Brenner?
I'll just make a suggestion. If you have any comments, you can write them out and have them for questions. I think I've said my piece for tonight. Thank you, sir.
Well, I think the LOC, EDCO, SLED, luncheon was well attended. I thought our economic development person, Mr. Ryan, did a pretty good job of putting together his first one. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend the tasting or the tour. I don't know how it went there, so.
It's good.
Corey,
sorry.
I did a lot of samples.
Well, I had to pee really bad, so I couldn't.
Okay.
But I think, you know, there were quite a few comments on the video, the drone part of the video that was shown. So I think the city and the council can be very proud of the job that SLED has been doing up to this point. And we can hope for the best. There were some nibbles, I guess, afterwards, so we'll stay tuned and see how that turns out. Thank you.
Long meeting and I'm tired. And part of it, I apologize if I was a little, I'm passionate about my business, so I apologize if I was a little short at all. I just, I think part of it's just, I've got a lot on my plate right now. I'm glad the portion of the meeting with ODOT went well, as well as can be expected, you know, and I think that council really got the point across that we're going to be a squeaky wheel and we want Alpine to not be forgotten in the process, and we want to move forward in spite of the difficulties. And other than that, I'm excited to attend my first LLC conference. So.
One thing.
Okay, go ahead.
I did attend the Small Cities Network meeting, and we spent the first hour talking about the solar program and what happened. And we had people there from the state telling us about all of the things that they had put together for that, and the counties and the cities in the area had everything put together. And they were quite amazed at how well everything went. The biggest problem was probably in traffic. In the traffic, the morning of the solar eclipse and the next day going home. Those were the two things. The city manager lived right in the canyon where the airplane went down, and it came down right in his backyard, basically, just back from the his property. And anyway, it was quite basically what we were told is that the city or the state is well prepared for any major emergency, including the possibility of a huge earthquake.
Okay, for my comments, I'm just glad to get this this hooking up overpass done with. We'll have to answer the questions the best. I don't know how you can be positive on that, but we'll try not to be too negative on that. Well, God, because we got a lot coming up in the future on them. And I'm sure they will move ahead on trying to do some improvements up there. I wanted to
say something. I know Connie likes being involved in this. I went to a school meeting where there's a couple of representatives of every school, and it's on the absentee thing, and that homeless come out because they said there are homeless people, kids, you know, that are out there. That, so they're going to come up with an idea of what the city can do to encourage, you know, attending school. They have a thing every month, so I'll go to the next one and I'll inform maybe somebody else as a counselor can step up to the plate to help out on that somehow. Other than that, I attended a lot of meetings. I mean, I tend to talk to a lot of people, and it was very interesting talking to Tammy Beatty. That was that was good on the ODOT part, plus the city and the county working together. And that's it. See everybody Thursday.
But watch out for the opening reception.
Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Did we ever get an answer? Sorry. I just remembered that. Did we ever get an answer about attending the dinner? Holly?
The COVID dinner?
Mm-hmm.
About it being separate from the awards?
About it being open to everybody?
Oh, yeah.
I never heard back from you. You had said that it was not open to everybody.
Yeah, that was something that was brought up months ago and nobody acted on it. We're going to have a pretty good party here.
So it's open to everyone?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
It's open to everybody.
Okay.
And, there's not very many counselors or anybody showing up from Ben, which really surprises me. So we're going to have a good showing here.
Nice.
So, which will be great.
Motion to adjourn.
There's a lot of wine.
Was that a
motion to adjourn?
Any adjourn?